Good evening, one and all. Yes, a Tuesday, another week, last day in October. Yes, I know, Halloween and everything like that, but last day in October. And I am here with another guest and another book and a chat. Well, as people you might have heard, like 2 weeks ago, I went back home for a week. I went back home for my niece goddaughter's wedding, see the family and stuff like that. And I knew before I got there what was going to happen because, people from my own country and people from around the world, they sort of you chat about stuff. And of course, as soon as I got there, whether it was on the airport chatting or whether it was with the family at the wedding or even in the bar watching the rugby later on, people going on about Trump and what's going on and everything like that. And obviously, with what's been going on, a number of court cases, the sort of whole thing about court cases and people's perhaps insight into a little bit more of what goes on in a court case has come to fruition. I know the very sort of first time talking to somebody back home, and it wasn't somebody from England, it's somebody from Europe, sort of saying about, how can this person be allowed to do this? And the term paper tiger for the American legal system was noted several times. And I'll tell you now as well, the people in Europe and people in Australia and stuff like that no longer use the word USA because they believe the states are no longer united, which is something that I didn't know about. But yes, that's what goes on. Well, when you're going to find out about something about the courts and sort of experience of people, what goes on in the court, you need an expert. And we have one today. He's a lawyer, writer, lecturer. He's been in the a lawyer for over 60 years. It just tells you. And he was he's well. Let's get him on the show because we can find out more because he's written a great book which tells a lot of stuff about this. I'm pleased to say on the show today, I have the one and only James Brosnahan, or is he's going to allow me to call him Jim. Hi Jim, how you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. The one and only. I like it.
Well, I don't know any others. I'm sorry. James or Jim.
There's 288,000 lawyers in California, but if you think I'm the one and only, it's okay with me.
Put it like
I'm
this,
glad
Jim.
to be here. And
You're
thank
the
you for
only
having
one.
me.
You're the only one I know. Jim, as I said, you've been in sort of a trial lawyer for over 60 years, but you grew up in Boston, sort of
I
Irish background and stuff like that. Did you have with the whole business with the Kennedys and stuff like that, did that sort of
Well,
affect you in any way?
they're in the book because they were a great inspiration. I knew them in a way, the way that millions of people knew them, but for me, they were a great inspiration. My father was very excited about the Kennedys because going back, if you go back far enough, the Kennedys represented the advancement of Irish Americans, and that who had been through quite a lot of problems in the 1800s when they
Right. Oh,
came
the
over
gangs
and
of New
all,
York and
the
all
whole
that. Yeah, yeah,
immigration
yeah.
problem. So yeah, they're in the book, and I was on various committees. I would say I was an amateur helper in all the campaigns, including Robert Kennedy's last campaign. I was his head of his lawyers in Northern California, where I've been for many years. But yeah, they were a great inspiration, and I talk about them.
We could do with them now, Jim. We could do with them now, definitely. Okay. I mean, had you? What sort of persuaded you to go into law?
I was watching with my father something called the Army McCarthy hearings. It was Senator
Okay. Yep.
McCarthy
Yep.
years ago, and this lawyer from a very conservative law firm in Boston was trying to defend a young lawyer who McCarthy had attacked. McCarthy attacked communists and people he claimed were communists, and this young man had been a member of the ACLU, and McCarthy was saying he was a communist. And finally, this older lawyer looked across the table on national television, and he said straight to McCarthy's face, "Have you no shame?" And that was the beginning of the end for McCarthy. I sat there and I thought, that looks like fun.
Right.
You're going to tell powerful people that they're wrong? I mean, that looked to me like a lot of fun. And I thought, maybe I could be a lawyer. And yeah. I did. I became a lawyer.
Well, you went to Harvard, didn't you? But it wasn't just your law degree you gained there.
Well, I used to go down to the college and attend classes down there. The security was not, I'm sure, what it's like today. And I spent a lot of time while I was in Harvard Law School going down to the college, listening to wonderful lectures on all kinds of things. So, but I got a great deal out of it, as I did at Boston College, where I went.
Ah, okay, right.
And they really, I was a sports person. I played two sports in college and three in high school and so forth. And that's actually how I got into college. Mm. But the Jesuit teachers were sharp-edged, very good minds, and a lot of logic and philosophy. And I just really had a wonderful time there, and I owe them a lot.
Including meeting your wife.
Well, my wife in the law school, I'll keep this very short, but there were nine women at the Harvard Law School when I was there. We were both, my wife and I, were in our third year when we met. We had hired a cook. Six of the guys had hired a cook, and the cook was Carol Simon.
Oh.
And we promised each other we wouldn't try to date the cook because that would just be a mess. You know, it could get messy and we'd lose the cook. So we all promised, quite seriously, we wouldn't do it. Carol and I got engaged 3 weeks later.
Oh.
And we got married 3 weeks after that. And I think we're 8 days from our 65th wedding anniversary.
So the quick romance worked, basically.
Yeah. No, it's been, especially me, I was just blessed by finding a person, and we've had an awful lot in common. Carol was a judge on the Alameda County Superior Court for 40 years, and, you know, It's one of those things, you can get lucky, and we did.
Yeah, indeed. It sounds very much so. Now, you've been, you practiced law as a trial lawyer for over 60 years. Can you explain what a trial lawyer, what does that mean to people like myself?
A trial lawyer is a person that certainly settles some cases, but also fairly often is retained because the case is going to be tried in a court of law. And that's really one of the things caused me to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted people to get the image of what that's like. And yes, it's a memoir. It is about me. But very often the heroes are other people. And I know, based on my 60 years, that the image of the excitement and the thrills, if you will, and the pressures and the importance of trials is not conveyed in the public sector as much today as it was. In the 1800s, people's main entertainment was to go down and watch trials.
Right. Yeah,
They had nothing else, and that was what they did. And they understood who the good trial lawyers were and all that. But so that's what I was trying to convey. And I think I did. I think people are happy with it. It's a bestseller on Amazon.
Great
today
stuff.
It's in three categories.
Well, as I say, as I said earlier on, a lot of people are sort of picking up and finding it more interesting with what's going on with all the court cases and everything right now.
Very much
people
so
are
right
definitely
now.
Picking it up, yeah.
I mean, there's one in Colorado today, President Trump, former President Trump, can be on the ballot.
Yeah.
I don't know of anything more important in politics, at least, or government at the moment than that. And that's all in a courtroom. And there's the scene, and there are the reporters. There, in many cases, there's 12 people sitting in a box.
Yep.
Just like readers of my book, they've been called to be jurors. And there are the witnesses. And, you know, as the years went by, I made a big difference, a big distinction between political truth, which we're all suffering through these days,
right,
and courtroom truth. You cannot lie successfully in court. But in politics, as we all now know, it's no problem.
Indeed. So, because you started, did you start off as a prosecutor for the first 5 years?
I did. It was my first trial, and I think readers would be interested because I went to work in the prosecutor's office on a Monday morning, and on Tuesday, we were very shorthanded. That's why this happened. There were only four of us. Where there should be many more. And the boss gave me a file and she said, "There's a trial on Monday. Will you try it?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, you know, this is going to be my first trial." I opened it. It was a first degree murder case with pleadings for the death penalty. That was my first trial.
Wow.
And of course, today there'd be all kinds of reasons why that would never happen to a brand new lawyer.
Yeah.
But it was a stabbing on an Indian reservation. And that was the beginning of me understanding the problems of Native Americans. And that to this day, I'm still interested in that. And that's at the beginning of the book.
Right. Now, sort of roughly how many cases did you work on in your time?
Well, how many I worked on, I have no idea. I had 150 trials.
Okay.
And I would imagine, given the for example, I mean, at one point I was carrying 60 cases.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're all different. But so I just have no idea. I just had all these cases. And as I went along, other lawyers helped me. For the first 12 years, I did all my cases by myself. But here's a point for your listeners. I came into the practice of law at a time when there were lawyers who believed, and they were right, that they could try any kind of case.
Mm.
And that's what I did through my whole career. And so I had the ability in putting the book together to draw what I hope the readers would enjoy and which were at the time very newsworthy. And in the book, they relate to things that are happening right now, like a presidential cover-up.
Right.
I prosecuted Caspar Weinberger.
All right.
Who was Secretary of Defense.
Yeah.
I defended a couple of people who were thought to be terrorists. And that raises an issue in the book, which is why do lawyers do what they do? You see them every day. There'll be some despicable person standing in court, and next to him is a lawyer. Why does he do that? And so that's in the book. I explore that. We're outsiders. And by nature, we don't mind that they call us names or whatever it is. We're going to do our job. And there's more outsiders in the United States than you might think. It's not all conventional lawyering. It's the excitement of a case where there's an awful lot at stake.
All right. I mean, I've come across over the last sort of 10 years, there's been an increase in doctors writing books and lawyers writing books.
Yes.
And I always say, well, doctors can write books now because they can use their computer and people don't have to try and read their handwriting anymore.
Yes.
And lawyers can write books because half the time they're telling stories anyway, sort of things.
Well, you know, it's so interesting because we're so specialized. There really are so many writers, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, who are teaching sometimes or writing or giving a lecture about how to write and all of that. When I got into it, yes, into my writing of this book, there were many differences and so forth, but there were so many things that were the same. It's all a form of rhetoric. And it's all about the audience. And I was lucky that a person told me that when I started the book. He says, it's not about you. He says, it's about the audience. And so I have a lot of scenes in this book where I take people to real things that happened, like talking to refugees in a Mexican prison, defending a woman church worker who had been indicted, or a woman who was the 17th most powerful woman in corporate America.
Yep, I know that one.
And,
yep.
And what she went through, yeah.
Yeah. I was working for Hewlett-Packard at the time, so...
yes, you were.
Yeah, so that was a Patricia... Patricia, was
yeah,
her name? Dunn?
Patty Dunn.
Yeah,
Patty
Dunn. Dunn. Yeah, yeah. So you were on that, were you?
Yeah, I defended her.
Wow, and she got... she. There was a dismissal. Yeah, yes, you won. You won.
We got it dismissed. But here's the interesting thing your readers might be interested in. There aren't any rules about how to try a case. There's ethical rules, but there's no rules. It's only situations.
Yep.
3 days after Patty was indicted, we put her on 60 Minutes with an audience of 14 million people. Why would we do... No lawyer would ever do that. Why would we do it? Because she was a lovely person, articulate, and by the way, it helped. She didn't do it. Mm. So we put her on there, and the tide changed, and they finally dismissed the case.
Can you tell us some of your other famous cases and sort of things that stick out and in the book, obviously?
Yeah, I defended a man in San Francisco who was accused of making bombs in his house to overthrow the president Marcos, who was the head of the Philippine government.
Uh-huh, yep.
And we got him off. We had a jury trial. I went to Northern Ireland and made a lot of trips over there, actually. I had one case but then I went and investigated the murders of two lawyers in Northern Ireland. They were wonderful lawyers, and that's in the book.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much coverage about redistricting the districts in all over the country and how they cheat. Both parties cheat to keep themselves in office and to get more power in the legislature, the state legislature, that they deserve, and that they do all this for years. Well, then California reformed that. We had, and I defended the commission that put together the districts, and they've done that now twice, and they've done it successfully, and they've done it objectively, and they've done in compliance with the California Constitution. But nobody in the country seems to be interested in reforming redistricting. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. Supreme Court, I argued two cases in the Supreme Court. If we have time, I can tell
sure.
you about that.
Yeah, please.
But the redistricting is a mess, and people are getting cheated on their votes.
Yeah.
Millions of people. On the U.S. Supreme Court, I went very briefly. I went and argued a case, and I tell about that case. It was quite exciting for me as a lawyer. But the scene of there are the nine justices and so forth. Then I went. I was subpoenaed to testify against William Rehnquist, who became the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, and I testified against him for 2 hours. I was grilled by the Senate Judiciary Committee, because what he did was he participated in a program in Phoenix, where I was a prosecutor at that time, to deter people from voting. And it was taken very seriously. It was covered nationally and all that. That's fine. So I did that, but he became Chief Justice. I then got another case representing the political parties in California. It was actually, a very important case.
Mm-hmm.
It was about First Amendment and the right of assembly and constitutional issues. So I have to go back into the court. There is Rehnquist sitting in the center seat, as Chief Justice of the United States. I just didn't know what he would do. And what happened there is in the book. You got to read the book.
Right. So. I mean, you were, much though you got into law, you also, at one time, didn't you want to be a painter?
Yes. I was pretty serious about that. I don't know that I had talent, but so I went down to Greenwich Village and I talked to some artists and I was thinking about that. But at the same time, I went up to Spanish Harlem in New York City and sat on a stoop one night watching the people and thinking, what would it be like to represent them? All these years, I've had an interest in the people who are kind of down and out and neglected and all that. So I went back to law school. But I took painting 35 years ago. Mostly, I go to the Sierras here in California and paint. Right. And it's one of the great, as some of your listeners probably know, it's one of the great hobbies in the world. I mean, when you start drawing the trees and the rivers and the mountains and the people or whatever it might be, your mind is just there. It's got nothing to do with law. It's just the greatest escape.
Time just goes. Yeah.
Yep.
You get lost. Your book, Justice at Trial, Courtroom Battles and Groundbreaking Cases, you said it's doing really well. It's number one in a couple of divisions.
It's going very well on Amazon. Today, it's in three categories of bestseller, as they say it.
Good stuff.
One of the categories is lawyer and judges' biographies, and that category has got a lot of the U.S. Supreme Court judges who either wrote biographies or there were biographies written about them. So I'm happy with what's happening. There's one other thing I just want to mention. When I was writing this book, I wanted to put in the hands of young people thinking about being a lawyer or maybe in law school, my view of what really happens in courtrooms.
Right.
And, it might be the one area where I claim, I'm an expert. I mean, and I have good things happening. I have bad things happening in this book. But it's a picture of a life of someone who is trying to help other people. And that gets lost somehow in the images of lawyers. I know maybe thousands of lawyers who spend their whole life representing the despised, trying to help people who are at the poverty level and below. They spend their whole lives doing it. They work on the rights of women. That's their specialty. That's what they're doing. And they're not making as much money as they might if they took their incredible talents and went into a big firm. That's real out there in America. That's going on today.
Yes.
And you started with a very good critique of that some people, not you, but some people think about that. I'll tell you why we will never have a dictator. Because the lawyers and the judges will stop that person. And you're seeing some of that right now.
You are. I still find it hard to understand how you have political judges. This judge is Democrat, this judge is Republican. To me, perhaps because it's nothing to do with the government in England directly, it's the law association, etc., that, you honour the law. You don't honour the law, but I support this person, whatever this party want to say. I can't get into my head, but I think it's just so different, that's all.
Well, I want to agree with you. I want to say that now I'm not sure there's ever been a time when we didn't have some judges who are more political than they ought to be. I think we probably did.
Right.
Some cases, though, have a political subject.
Yes.
But,
yes, that's
but
better.
That's
so,
not
yeah.
the same thing as the judge being political.
Indeed.
But you, I'm not disagreeing with you, and I'm hoping that I wrote a book that has got some sharp edges to it. But reform, when that's going on, there's some lawyer standing a lectern making a tremendous argument about why this thing, whatever it is, has to be reformed.
Yeah.
And that's going on.
Well, I'm sure the book, a lot of people, as we've been saying, you know, are into it, sort of started to follow more and try and get an better understanding of that. Whoops. Oh, dear. Looks like we lost him. See if I can get him back again. Oh, yeah. Try.
Hello.
Hi, that's a line dropped. I was just saying that you know, I think that's why your book's becoming, you know, a lot of people are reading and obviously interesting, not just the people studying law, but, you know, people who want to find out a bit more. And I'm sure that's why your book, Justice at Trial, Courtroom Battles and Groundbreaking Cases, is doing so well. But what I'm going to do now, Jim, is actually hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your book.
Yeah. Well, I'm on LinkedIn, for one thing, if some of your listeners are on LinkedIn. I have a website, Jim J. Brosnahan, Brosnahan, .com. It's available. It can be ordered at any bookstore, and it comes within about 7 days. Any bookstore anywhere in the United States, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, several other chains can get it for you, and. So that's it's widely distributed, and I'm getting feedback, which is kind of nice for me at my age. You know, I'm 69.
Wow.
And I keep saying 69. I'm 89.
I was going to say, you can't be younger than me, Jim.
I wish I was 69. Yeah, it'd be much better. But I'm
89.
I'm 89. And, you know, people are writing to me that we had some case together, you know, in New York City,
right,
or whatever it might be. I'm on social media, which I'm not sure why people are so afraid of it, because it's for more mature people.
Exactly.
Let me call myself more mature. It's a wonderful way to keep in contact.
Indeed it is. Well, Jim, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. My guest today, James Brosnahan. So that's J-A-M-E-S, even though we called him Jim. That's what the book's under, James. And it's Brosnahan, which is B-R-O-S-N-A-H-A-N. Brosnahan. And we've been talking about his great book, Justice at Trial, Courtroom Battles and Groundbreaking Cases. Very interesting, very informative, not just for people in the legal system, I'm sure, you know, from what we've heard, number one bestseller in three different fields. Great, great memoir, great lot of information, very, very interesting. Well, that's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, got one thing left to say.